Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the P1 podcast with Matt and Tommy. Yep, we're back. Race two of a 24-race season. No, I'm joking. I actually had a good time, despite Max Verstappen dominating from essentially lights to flag. But, you know, they had a little Norris lead for a little while. You never knew if there was going to be seven safety cars to change the complexion of the race. But yes, Tommy, we're going to talk about Saudi Arabia and we're going to reflect on some key moments. There were some interesting things to keep an eye on. So lots to still talk about.
Yeah, things actually happened in this race. We discussed it on Twitch saying that, oh, it's actually a pretty decent race. I mean, our expectations are unbelievably.
Let's not preface this with this was a decent race, because I know for a fact people will be like, absolutely not. What are you saying?
Well, what I'm saying is that it was actually a decent race in this 2023 era that we've kind of had.
2023?
Basically, it feels like the same season, you know what I mean? Since then, the sport has changed quite a bit. So this, I'd say this was actually an all right race because things happened. There was enough to distract us, really, from... I know it wasn't the greatest race in the world, but at least things did happen and go on unlike the previous race. So wasn't the be-all and end-all.
It certainly wasn't, and we'll get into all of that very shortly. First and foremost, I need to shout to you about the P1 Live Show tickets that we are doing in Cambridge, Bath and London. I know for a fact that Bath has only a few tickets remaining. I think Cambridge is close behind, and then London, we'd love to see you there as well on the 14th. So it's 11th, 12th and 14th of April. If you want to come along, please do. Right, let's start with my most memorable moment, and it has to be Oliver Behrman's drive, because it needs to be spoken about. It has been spoken about. The boy from Chelmsford, as Crofty kept saying over and over. Behrman finishing P7, rocking up on the Friday, having a practice session in a car he's never driven, in a series he's not... Obviously, he had a go in the Haas, hasn't he? But realistically, he's never driven Saudi in a Formula One car. Lots of things to learn, and he was utterly, utterly impressive. To finish P7 was just phenomenal. He showed like he was really unfazed more than anything. And I would like, you know, I always like to call it having the minerals. And he definitely had both vitamins and minerals in this particular Grand Prix weekend. Didn't even have the first two practice sessions. And he was, and I think Charles Leclerc actually said after the race, sort of reflecting on Oliver Behrman's performance and saying that he remembers watching him in the garage on Friday. And after about three laps, he was like, oh my God, he's already on it, getting close to the walls and stuff like that. So if you're impressing Charles Leclerc, you know you're doing something right.
You're going to get jealous, even more jealous of Ollie Behrman now, impressing Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, he hasn't called him babe though, has he yet? So it's fine.
Yeah, amazing performance from Ollie Behrman to get points. I think the most impressive thing, there'll be people that go, oh, you know, so some people going, well, he's in a Ferrari. It's like, yeah, but he didn't do any of the Friday practice running. It's a daunting track. We've seen other drivers spinning off. One of them crashed into the wall. It's a very difficult circuit, and he's not made a single mistake. He wasn't ever going to be beating Charles Leclerc, but the fact that he's scored a point, you know, he's finished ahead of Norris and Hamilton, like... It's a very impressive debut, and it was no mean feat what he did. The fact that he just looked ice cool, like he's driving a Ferrari. We've spoken so many times about the pressure of being a Ferrari driver, and he had to do that on his debut with no practice, 18 years old, and he didn't make any mistakes. I think that's the most impressive thing.
And to do a race start for the first time ever in a Formula One car. in the actual situation that he was
pit
in
stop.
And do pit stops. Or a pit stop, because one-stop races, woo. But for those people that say, oh, Ollie Bearman's in a Ferrari, that's what you expect from him. Are you serious? Please point me to the part of that Ferrari where it drives by itself. Please, tell me how he goes around Saudi Arabia with all of these assists that the Ferrari apparently brings him. No. Just put some respect on an 18-year-old's name. That is such an impressive debut performance. Of course, qualifying, you know, I'm sure he could get through to Q3 and start a little bit higher up. But once he got into clear air after getting past Hülkenberg, he apparently lost like 9 seconds overall to Leclerc. he finished just over, 2.7 seconds behind Russell for sixth. And he managed to just withstand the pressure from Norris and Hamilton behind, both on soft tyres. Imagine getting that radio call. Yeah, so we've got Lando Norris and 7-time world champion Lewis Hamilton bearing down on you around one of the most difficult circuits on the calendar. For people, it's such a lazy view for someone to say he's in a Ferrari, he should be doing that. It's like you need to have a concept of the sport and what these drivers are doing. It's not the game.
Yeah, I'm sure it's exactly the same people that diminish everything that Max is doing at the moment, and those kind of people.
Oh no, he does have autopilot.
Oh, does he? Okay, fair enough. But yeah, it's really good. The fact that other drivers, like I say, made mistakes. He didn't. Pace was good. I thought there's so much that he had to have in that race where, you know, he started on a different compound. He was caught up in the mix of other cars and things like that. He so easily could have, you know, clipped a front wing at the start, or, you know, doing your first pit stop and it was a bit crazy in the pits because everyone obviously pitted behind a safety car as well. There's a lot for him to deal with in that race, and Saudi of all circuits as well.
Respect. Those first few laps were pretty tense, I would say. Bearman, obviously, he ran wide, didn't he, on lap one, and you're thinking, uh-oh, hold on, you know, is the whole scenario getting to him a little bit? And he did have a very close moment with Tsunoda, which I think he was quite lucky to get away with. But apart from that, he sort of settled into the race, and yeah, what a performance. Question from GameChanger08. Does Bearman already deserve an F1 seat for 2025? Will Haas be a most likely team for him, and eventually he will replace Lewis at Ferrari in a few years' time? Okay, all right, let's give it a second here. Let's just take a deep breath. I mean, I said even after his practice performance in the Haas in Abu Dhabi last year that he has already shown that he's got the speed, and I think this proves that he's also got everything else that you need to become a Formula One driver. No doubt. Like, that there is no more difficult situation for a driver than to have one practice and then dive into a Grand Prix weekend at last minute. I think it works in his favour a little bit in the sense of he doesn't have all these days to mull it over, like, oh my God, I'm going to drive a Ferrari. So I guess in that sense, if you have a particular personality that can deal with that, it's fine. So for Bearman, it obviously was. And yes, I think that, you know, K-Mag, as much as I'm going to probably praise you in this podcast for being an absolute maniac, he's probably should replace Magnussen for next year because Bearman has shown that he's got the speed, and I think he'll only get better if he gets a season under his belt.
Yeah, I think this question is a classic case of, while Bearman did unbelievably good, deserves all the plaudits. Yeah, B. Hamilton deserves all the plaudits that he gets. I do think people need to maybe calm down a little bit because let's not forget, you know, Nyck de Vries was the super sub, and I'm not suggesting for a second that Ollie Bearman's going to go into Formula One next year and do as bad as Nyck de Vries did, but it just shows that you kind of need to like take a step back and not put piles and piles of pressure that he's the next Lewis Hamilton, and oh my God, yeah, we should replace Lewis at Ferrari when he leaves. Like, that is such an extreme thing to say already. He's done a fantastic job. He did everything he needed to do. I think the biggest takeaway for me is it shows that there's so many young drivers waiting in the wings. You know, we've seen it now. We've seen it with Liam Lawson, who did a fantastic debut, and of barely a few months ago, we were all saying, why isn't Lawson getting the drive? This is ridiculous. And now it's Ollie Bearman. It just shows that there are so many of these drivers. You've got to think, you know, what could have Drugovic done if he'd have been able to drive instead of Stroll at the start of last year? All these drivers just deserve a chance and they're not getting it. And that is the frustrating thing, I think, that can be taken away from this, that there are so many drivers out there that can do a good job. But no, the grid has to stay exactly the same.
Well, it's a sport that, you know, Formula One is incredible, but its biggest limitation is that they're the 20 best drivers in the world.
But they're also
and
not.
And that's it. You know, you think of football, you think of most sports. You play for a team and there's loads of teams and there's thousands of professionals, you know, taking part in their sport. Whereas this, it is 20 and then there's a lower division which you can't even take part in if you've won it or whatever. And it wouldn't be good for your career anyway if you're waiting on the site. Oh, go race an F2. Yeah, why not? It's
all
so
about timing as well. It's the sad reality. And it's a horrible thing to think about, but like Bearman, that could, and I hope it's not, but that could be Bearman's only ever like Formula. Yeah, I really hope
crazy.
It's not, but it could
that's
be.
Crazy.
But it could be.
K-Mag's opened up that door enough. That, you know
no, but
I mean?
You say that, and then you know someone starts smashing it in F2, and oh my god, they're the next best thing. Oh, we need to get him. He definitely deserves a seat. And like,
but thankfully,
it's just
Bearman's
changing.
Still in F2.
Well, yeah, but it's
and
changing
he was on pole
all the
for that
time.
And had to withdraw. So
yeah,
poor bloke.
It changes all the time, doesn't it? So it's about having those breaks, and I'm glad he has. And I think it's shown that there are drivers that deserve to be there, and that is the frustrating thing.
And they show that they can do it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to share about your controversial take on this that you kind of mentioned as well around F1 cars these days?
What, being potentially a little bit easier to drive than normal, that essentially he's not done months of training for it? And that comes down to the fact that, you know, I'm not saying it's easy because he deserves the plaudits for anyone thinks I'm saying that, but it does show that I guess these Formula 2 drivers can step in, because we've seen it with De Vries, we've seen it with Lawson. They can come in mid-season and do a really solid job. You know, it's happened 3 times now in a row. But again, maybe it says more about the calibre in Formula 2 as well at the moment, and there's all these drivers that deserve seats.
P1 Patreon member Shikau, why Norris and Hamilton on fresh softs couldn't catch up to Bearman and others on old hards? Maybe not the best structured question, but yes, why did they not catch Bearman? Well, they both went on to slightly used soft tyres, and I guess the differential wasn't massive. I think that they had on the graphic that it was 1.1 seconds between softs and hards, but there's so many factors within that it's like, well, yeah, but the softs were a little bit used, and you've also got the fact that there's different conditions and there's lighter fuel loads, and I'm a little bit confused as to how they didn't catch as quickly. But then again, Saudi, as you mentioned, Tommy, in the Twitch watch along, there's not, as much as there's 27 corners, a lot of them are fast and they're kinks, and there's not a huge amount of areas for drivers to take advantage of extra grip. I would say, you know, maybe in that sort of middle part of the lap where it's, you know, really close to the walls and stuff, but a lot of it is very, very high speed. So yeah, I'd probably say that, but even then, the delta was supposedly going to be 1.1 seconds. So perhaps those sort of 5-6 laps that Norris and Hamilton had already taken out of those softs before going on to them, just took off that edge, that sort of half a second extra that perhaps they would have had they whacked on fresh softs, because they were still catching, but not at the rate that either of us expected.
Yeah, they're catching, but it wasn't enough. Like I said, the you know, when you've got heavy braking zones or more twisty technical sectors, you're going to catch up a lot more because you can brake a lot later, you can take so much more corner speed. But like you said, when it's flat out kinks for 20 of the 27 corners, pretty much, you're not gaining a huge amount. Not that I wanted them to catch him, because I'm glad he actually kept that position, because it made for an incredible story. But does make me wish that that they maybe were was a bigger advantage, because that's how you get overtaking and excitement and what we saw sort of back in the mid 2010s and things with the Pirelli tires. But alas, one stops.
Yeah, one stops. Ooh. I guess it's, you know, not having that spread of compound, and it's also about the tire allocation and not having a fresh set of softs available to you. You actually have to use one that you've used previously in a qualifying session or whatever. So, yeah, unfortunately, that is the state of Formula One. But, you know, one day maybe they will give it a go. And just do a little C1, C3, C5, see what happens. And it's the greatest race of all time. And then we have them in every single Grand Prix. Okay, Tommy, hit us with your most memorable moment.
My moment, most memorable moment is the Haas to plan from Haas and K-Mag. Basically, using K-Mag, his ability of being Kevin Magnussen and causing a bit of chaos to their advantage, because he drove quite recklessly, got penalties, and then realised that, well, actually, it's impossible to overtake, which is a rant for later in the podcast, so stay tuned for that one. And Kevin Magnussen was able to essentially hold up the whole field, go sometimes, you know, even 2 seconds a lap slower, couldn't get past, and it just allowed Nico Hülkenberg to basically have almost a free pit stop by the end of it. And it's something we've seen in Formula One before. This is maybe the most extreme example I remember in recent years of this happening. But they played it well, because it's a team sport. I'm sure Haas are very happy that they've got a driver that would agree to do that, because essentially he's sacrificing his own race, really, and his performance, just knowing that they could get a point on the board. And it was a great decision from Haas, because it just completely opened up, and you wonder why more teams haven't done it before, particularly the likes of Monaco and stuff.
Yeah, with the lower place teams, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to become a problem, but K-Mag and just letting him off the leash and going, K-Mag chaos, that's what I've ordered. Let's see what you can do. And of course, you know, he racked up 20 seconds worth of penalties very early on, so his race was done. And then fair play for him to take it on, you know, him and Haas. I don't know who obviously made the decision, but I'm sure K-Mag getting that information and then being able to quite cleverly defend and slow down. It was, you know, it's not like it just does it itself. K-Mag was very clever in the way in which he deployed his battery, made sure that he was really quick out of the final corner so that, you know, Ocon, whoever it might have been, couldn't get enough of a run to make the move into turn one. And I loved when we were looking at his rear wing, looking back at Ocon, I think, at the time. And he'd had, you know, a reasonably good first couple of corners, a bit too good, actually. And you hear him come off the throttle before anywhere near the braking zone, so that Ocon's right behind him again as he goes into the corner, and then just goes 2 seconds slower than he can do in that first sector. Absolute cinema. Genuinely, yeah. I thought it was really quite fun to watch. Some people are like, oh, it goes against the spirit of the sport. But for me, I found it entertaining, and, you know, thankfully, that was one of the only bits that we could... Well, not thankfully. I mean, thankfully, it came up as one of the most entertaining parts of the race.
Fight for P12.
Yeah, and, you know, I had a lot riding on this as well, because I was back in my boy Hülkenberg. So, K-Mag did a great job with that. We will then get on to his penalties now, actually, with a question from Formula Latest. What do you think about the second K-Mag penalty? It seemed really harsh to give him 10 seconds for that. So for some people that may not be aware, and to be fair, I wasn't aware going into this weekend, around the sort of baseline penalties that have changed going into this year. So the drivers have kind of voted and wanted this to happen, where things like contact and leaving the track and gaining an advantage, like K-Mag did, where he made the overtake, went off the track and then carried on, those penalties are now penalised harder than they were before. Usually it was 5 seconds. You remember Fernando Alonso saying to Julian Palmer, 5 seconds, it's a yoke. Classic Monza team radio. Well, it's now 10 seconds. And for me, you know, penalties will never please anyone, but I think that's worthwhile, especially because it then will decentivize, if that's a word, unincentivize, that's the one, drivers to do that, you know, to break the rules and be like, ah, screw it, I'll just do that, carry on, take the 5 seconds and extend. Now it's 10 seconds and you have to really weigh up, is that actually worth it? Because I think a lot of the time it won't be, especially if this is in the midfield.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind is last year with Sergio Perez and Alex Albon in Singapore, where essentially Perez steams down the inside. It's not a clean move, but he gets a 5 second penalty. And then, of course, he's in a Red Bull, so he's got such an advantage. He can pull 5 seconds away. It's funny that people say this is a bit harsh for 10 seconds. Now, in the midfield, yeah, you go, this is the whole thing with penalties and how you judge it based on what actually happens. Because you know for a fact, and I said this in our watch along, that Max Verstappen, or almost like what he did in Vegas, you know, where he broke the rules, got a penalty, and he went, well, that's fine, I'll just stay ahead then and pull a gap. And you know that then people were going, well, it should be 25 seconds or whatever. But when it's in the midfield, yeah, like 5 seconds, 10 seconds, can you lose you a lot of time? Does make me think, and maybe we always say this and maybe it doesn't happen, but it does set a precedent that Formula One teams can essentially, that you can go for a dive bomb that's never really on, cut the corner, and then you're ahead. And then it's worth it to back everyone up for your teammate. You know, I joked in a social clip that Magnussen might as well just cut turn one at Australia, back the whole field up, take the penalties again, because it's really hard to overtake. So it's hard to judge, because for this 10 seconds we're going, oh, that seems a bit harsh, but it got Haas a point, because I don't think Magnussen's overtaking Yuki Tsunoda anywhere else on the track, and essentially he overtook him illegally, stayed ahead of him, and then just blocked him the whole race. So it worked.
It did work. It worked for Hülkenberg. It didn't obviously work for Magnussen because he sacrificed himself. But I think that this doesn't become a thing purely because I think a lot of tracks this doesn't work, especially if, you know, Saudi, you can't really overtake in a lot of places. And then as long as Magnussen gets a decent run with good straight line speed, then he was okay. I don't think every team can do that. Only teams that boast great straight line speed. So Williams will be writing this one down and going, yep, yeah, that's James Vowles. Yeah, okay, cool. Let's do that. Absolutely. You can't really do it in Monaco because there's nowhere really to cut. Maybe the chicane, actually.
The chicane.
No, you could go out
straight
the tunnel,
over the chicane.
Straight
on. Boom.
Love that. Win the race. Yes, I think that I have to be careful, but I think it is very track specific, and it's such a unique situation. I think that, you know, you had an Alpine, for example, that, you know, basically you would have been faster to get out and walk trying to get past Magnussen for a while.
Yeah, it was the dream for Magnussen that it was a front of it, of all the cars you want at the front of the DRS train, behind you is the Alpine.
If it had been Albon, then, you know, with no damage, he would have flown past and probably even scored a point maybe. So, I think it was just the situation that brought itself there, and K-Mag took full use of that.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Question from F1 Pharrell. What do you think about the decision of Lando's jump start?
A yoke.
Which wasn't a jump start, apparently. I don't know. I still don't understand really what's gone on there, because he's moved his grid box whilst the lights are coming on, which is against the rules. But we've also seen other drivers moving around the grid box, but I believe, you know, I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they would be maybe moving around before the lights come on. Because he moved, but that was him just adjusting in his grid box, wasn't it? So different situation to the lights coming on. Norris went. It looks clear as day he has left his grid box as well, stopped, and then carried on again, and obviously didn't get a great start. So the only reasoning I've got here for that is that the FIA have gone, well, he hasn't actually gained an advantage, no penalty. But how I always thought of it was if the sensor goes off, you get a penalty no matter what. Like, done, slam dunk, see you later, cheers. So very surprising. I thought that was going to be a penalty given to him almost immediately.
Me too. I think there should be some kind of... I think Formula One as a sport, particularly as it's kind of trying to appeal to all these new Formula One fans, that being said, you know, we've been watching it for years and years and years and decades and meant to know wheel. And we don't even understand why this is a thing. So there should be some kind of... I feel like it's F1's duty to sort of explain to fans why. Because you look at that and it, from face value, it's a jump start all day long. And in other sports, you kind of... These kind of things happen and you go, well, it can be explained. It'd be like, oh, well, this person's here, so that's why it's done. Whereas in Formula One, it's just like, no, don't worry, mate. It's not a penalty. Okay.
Yeah, so we can see with our own eyes that this happened. And I'm actually watching Sky's explanation of it right now, live on the podcast. So I'm going to see what Anthony Davidson says. We can stay tuned with this. On each grid box, there is a sensor. Yeah, cool. So he points to a line where his wheels are clearly over. Oh my God, so it appears the sensor wasn't working. That's what Anthony Davidson reckons. So yeah. It didn't detect him moving, which makes perfect sense. But then, use common sense. You go, hello, we are the FIA, we can give penalties.
Yeah, right. Just to do a really extreme example of that, a driver, say, like, obviously they wouldn't do this because they wouldn't know it wasn't going to work, but say the pit lane speed detector isn't working and one of the drivers flies down the pit lane at 200 miles an hour. It's like, well, sensor wasn't on.
It's a very extreme example, though.
It's a very extreme example, but for the purpose of explaining it, like, you can see the literal thing in front of you that it's a penalty. So why does it need technology to tell us that that's a jump start? Because we all have eyes and we can see it.
I bet it's because McLaren can then argue that, like, it probably says in the rules somewhere, if the sensor gets triggered, then you get a penalty. The sensor hasn't triggered because it's broken or faulty. And McLaren are like, well, doesn't say anything about eyeballs in this rulings. It's ridiculous, don't get me wrong. But it was clear as day that he jumped the start and should have got a penalty. So funny as well that he joked about what he could do in the race after qualifying. And he said, I could jump the start. And he quite literally did. Didn't get a penalty somehow.
Maybe because he admitted that he was going to do it. That's allowed.
Maybe that's in the rules. Who knows? But Lando, very lucky boy to not get penalised for that. Next question, P1 Patreon member AMG Piper. Is it too soon to say Daniel Ricciardo is washed? Surely if he wants the Red Bull seat, he needs to be beating Yuki. Oh, God. This is not a good conversation if you're a Daniel Ricciardo fan. Nope. An embarrassing weekend, really, in Saudi for Danny Rick. Has to be beating Yuki. Completely agree with you, AMG Piper. If he wants to drive anything better than an RB, that's absolutely what he needs to do. And if anything, if he wants to keep his seat in an RB, he needs to be at least matching Yuki Tsunoda, if not beating. Look, perhaps he's got a terrible start to the season and he'll pick it up. We are two races in. But if this form continues, I'm very concerned about the future. Let's not forget, he has got a great performance in him. Mexico last year, unbelievable. But what's going on at the moment here? You know, spinning on his own out of turn one as well. Yeah. I was like, oh no, that just kind of added insult to injury, didn't it? I was like, oh no, this is
sounds like he's had a very slow pit stop, but that doesn't excuse the fact that he was half a second off Yuki in qualifying, and then you think, oh, he's better in the races. So, and, you know, he was battling or way behind Logan Sargeant and then spins on his own. It was a performance at the kind of end of the McLaren Danny Rick era where you were just like, God, this isn't right. What is going on with him? And yeah, if it carries on, it's only race two, but if it carries on, it's not it's not a question of is he going to get the seat at Red Bull, because Perez is doing exactly what he needs to do. I know he did this last year, and we'll see. But at the moment, Perez is doing exactly what he needs to do. Daniel Ricciardo is more under threat of losing his RB seat completely, particularly when we've seen what Lawson can do against Tsunoda and how he's performed against Tsunoda. So if Daniel does keep getting sort of beaten by Tsunoda, yeah, it's really not good.
Yeah, not a good start to the season, and we'll have to monitor this over the next few races because, yeah. But then, I guess, learnings from last year is, as you say, Tommy, Perez had a great start to the year, and then it all kind of went downhill. And then by the mid-season, we're like, oh, he's going to lose his seat, just because that is how Formula One goes and knee-jerk reactions and all that. So, a weekend to forget for Danny Ric for sure. And also for Tsunoda as well, because Tsunoda should have done so much better, but then kind of got caught up in that whole battle. K-Mag obviously doing that cheeky little illegal overtake basically ruined his race completely.
It's almost like Yuki Tsunoda, it's like illegal for him to score points because something always happens. He almost always has the pace to be 10th, but it's a different reason every time. Last time, you know, he couldn't pass or whatever and got caught up and fell back. Then this time, you're like, oh, he's going to score points easy. Oh, no, he's been passed by Magnussen illegally and now he's getting blocked by him, and then it all kind of fell apart from there.
Certainly did. Let's move on now to biggest winner, driver or team. I wonder who we're going to go for this week. Mine is Oliver Behrmann, because of all the reasons listed above in this podcast, great drive. No one else deserves it more than him.
I'm going to go for Haas, because they're now sixth in the constructors' title. And it showed, yeah, because
wow.
It's the conversation that we've had.
Yeah, the top five teams.
If no one, if it wasn't for Stroll crashing into a wall and then not being able to take his car back to the pits, we'd have another 10 lockout and no points. So that point for Haas, I'm not saying that other teams aren't going to score points, but it could be very important indeed come the end of the season.
If they all continue to finish every single race. But we did have a couple of DNFs this time.
Gasly's car already, just like, nah, I'm good.
Gasly was like, nah, we're not going to have three races in a row where 20 drivers finish. Peace. Biggest loser then? Biggest loser. There's a few candidates for sure.
Lance Stroll has put himself under pressure again of being a bit rubbish. I know it's only one race, but...
having a dreadful, dreadful time.
Gasly not even
beaten
starting.
By his teammate when his teammate had damage.
Gasly is now 21st in the title. I would actually nominate Sargeant, the fact that with Ollie Behrmann now getting a point, P21 is a possibility again, so... Man
oh
needs to get a point.
Gracious me. All right, I'm going to lock in Kick because they are literally nowhere and they're 17th and 18th. What's yours?
I will go for Lance Stroll. Yeah, because I think after the last race and how well he did, we were like, oh, he's so much better than last year, and then he's binned it. And it was also miles off Alonso in qualifying. So it's
certainly
almost
was.
Like we saw the good side of Stroll and then immediately after saw the bad side again.
What side will we see in Australia? We will have to wait and see. Let's now reflect on our predictions that we made on Wednesday and see how we did. Now, coming into this, Tommy, do you remember how many points we both have?
No.
Okay, well, that's what we have to do. That's what
we
promised people. We said we're going to keep an eye on it. Is it 3-all or 4-all? I'm pretty sure
we
are drawing.
Yeah.
Yes. See, Tommy, we have to remember that because people ask for it.
Okay.
Right. We are drawing. That's all that matters right now. Biggest good surprise? Oh, I've been chefing. Nico Hülkenberg, thank you very much. That is... Oh,
thank
I thought
you,
it was
K-Mag.
Done and dusted when he was... kept out there on the medium tyres, and after his car breaking down in qualifying, he said, no, I am going to deliver a point for Haas and a point for me. Come on.
I went for Logan Sargeant. And I even said, as soon as you did your next prediction, I was like, well, that's gone out the window. And yep, sure did.
I love as well, you've literally gone for biggest good surprise Logan Sargeant, and my guy has gone out of the top 20 in the Drivers' Championship because of you.
What do you mean?
Well, he was in the top 20 in the Drivers' Championship, and then Oliver Bearman came in and has now put him down to P21.
Well, he's not 21st. Biggest good he's not 21st.
Oh, is he not?
No. Gasly's 21st, sadly.
Oh, because he's had the worst results. So where he is has. Logie?
So Logie's, where is Logie right now? Logie's way up there in 19th.
Oh, okay.
Come on, Logie.
Sorry for the slander.
I don't think you get biggest flop now because he's actually improving last year.
Nah, absolutely jog on. Biggest flop! I went for Logan Sargeant. He should have beaten Albon. My guy's been squeezed into the wall by Magnussen, had damage, and he still finished four places behind his teammate. I'm cashing in on that flop.
Yeah, I don't understand how James Vowles is going to keep defending him if it's going like this. Biggest flop, I went for Lewis Hamilton, which, yeah, definitely. He was the worst of the best. Just not a good weekend at all for Hamilton, really.
Certainly was not. Congratulations on that flop point, Tommy. Congrats. Pole position. I went for Charles Leclerc. Didn't happen. So we'll see you in 2 weeks' time, where I predict him in pole again.
And I also went for Charles Leclerc. No.
You bought into that hype train, and it did not leave the station. Our top three, then, in third position. Perez. No, it was second.
You were so confident.
I forgot. How did I think it was third? I was thinking of Quali. What am I doing?
I've just celebrated. Amazing clip.
That is wild. How have I forgotten Perez finished second? That is crazy. Damn it. I literally came into thinking, oh yeah, I got a point for top three because obviously Perez finished third. No, that was in Quali. All right, cool. 0 points. You?
I went for Carlos Sainz and he didn't even do the
race.
That's
wild. So. Yeah, he didn't even do the race. In second, I went for Verstappen. Don't care.
P2 went for Charles Leclerc, which you thought he was second, but he wasn't. He was third.
Which is great. And then first, I went for Charles Leclerc because I'm an imbecile.
And I went for Max Verstappen because I'm not an imbecile.
Yeah, well done, mate. Congratulations. Hope you're happy. You're just going to win by going Max first.
So
that's
currently
it.
Level, then.
Yep, still level, but we've still got one crazy prediction. Tommy, relax. There will be at least two forms of safety car. Now, let's discuss this. Was the virtual safety car flown for at least 0.1 of a second and then they changed it to safety car? I'm going to say yes.
No. You can't have that one.
Half a point. All right, cool.
No points. Mine was has to get a point. And
that's absolutely disgraceful. You just copied me. You copied me. You saw the Nico Hülkenberg hype train. You saw biggest good surprise and you went, yeah. And to be fair, you've nailed it. Congratulations.
Yeah. Enjoy the money.
I thought I gained a point as well now, and I forgot you did that. That's really irritated me now. And the three crazy predictions from you, wonderful lot. Lozzie Dorg, one of the McLaren boys on the podium. No,
Piastri was close.
Yeah, we actually didn't even mention Piastri. Piastri absolutely cooked this weekend. Just finishing fourth. Couldn't get past Hamilton to save his life, but that's fine. I don't think he
was. Oh, that was actually going to be my rant about, because we didn't... I was going to mention
you teed up a rant and you never ever ranted.
It's because the question wasn't used in the end. But
go on, just rant. Go on, Tommy.
But basically, while it was hilarious to watch Kevin Magnussen, I couldn't think whilst watching that happen, no one able to get past a Haas for the second time in two races, and also watching Oscar Piastri, even with DRS, unable to pass Lewis Hamilton, just made me depressingly think how Formula One baited us so much with these new rules. It's so easy to overtake and it's just falling like exactly the same way every other rule has done, where it starts off really good and then the F1 engineers have to ruin it and now it's really hard to overtake again. And it's very frustrating. You know, it's something Ollie Bearman actually mentioned, that he was like, he got behind another car and was like, wow, this is difficult compared to Formula 2. And that's depressing.
It really is. But that's not a note we want to leave the podcast on. But yes, I do agree that it is, it is a shame.
It's because very annoying.
You know, a couple of years ago, at this very track, we had one of the greatest fights for the lead again, with Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. They were both quick in different parts of the track.
They were like, oh my God, it's so good. They can pass and repass.
I'm not going to have a go at F1 because F1 did clearly create regulations at the beginning of 22 that worked. And then the F1 teams went, nah, bruv. I want to make sure that the wake is as wakey as possible coming off the rear end of my car or our car to ensure that the car behind can't overtake us. It's Formula One teams that are ruining this, and F1 need to make even tighter, stricter regulations to stop them from messing up with the air. Spec series or just use the F2 cars. Well, let's not open up that box, shall we? Okay, what else have we got for crazy predictions? Dennis, a Merc engine blows up. No. Sir Bacon VI, V-carb double points finish. Absolutely not. They got a whopping 0 points. So congratulations to them. And that pretty much sums up this chaotic Saudi Arabian Grand Prix podcast, Tommy. What are your final thoughts?
Final thoughts are that... Oh,
here we go. Tommy should be in bed. It is 9 p.m.
right now. At least there's some spice in driver ratings for a change. So look forward to that one.
Stay tuned for
compared
driver
to the
ratings.
Last race where nothing happened. So there's actually things to be discussed and opinions to have. So can't wait to get cancelled for that one. Bring it on.
Very surprised that you didn't just bring up Fernando Alonso scoring a very solid P5, because I thought that would be a good opportunity for you to shout and rave about your boy and the fact that he, you know, Aston Martin didn't look as bad as they did in Bahrain race trim. So good stuff for Aston Martin. And actually as well, didn't even mention, Ocon finished 13th. What a great drive. Didn't even finish last. So Alpine clearly making steps forward, even though he still was a lap down. But that's Max Verstappen for
you. He's going to be miles ahead of Gasly in the championship. They're not going to be happy about that.
I also really enjoyed as well, just to clarify anyone that still has confusion about it, that the race classification gaps are with penalties applied, because everyone was seeing that Leclerc finished 4.996 or whatever it was seconds behind and was like, well, how's he not got second then? So he finished just under 10 seconds behind and then the 5 seconds was applied. So that's just to clarify that one for anyone that was wondering why Leclerc
was. But you definitely
second.
Didn't think Perez was third.
That's true. Maybe that's what happened there. Maybe that is what's, you know, the confusion that's happened here is due to that and the amount of people messaging me about it. Okay, that is it. Thank you, everybody. Much appreciate everyone for turning up to the Twitch watch-alongs and for supporting our content as always. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Well, we'll see you before then. We've got content, you know, we've got content to make. But the next race is in Australia, a couple of weeks' time. We will probably look quite tired because it's an early one. But we're not going to complain. And it's a Sunday. It's the first Sunday race of the year. We've got this. I can't believe it's Saturday today. It's still, I can't get my head around it.
We've not heard the Dutch national anthem on a Sunday yet. There's something to
think
about.
That's a reason to tune in a couple of weeks for the third race of 24 this year. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Make sure you follow us on all of our socials. We're MattP1Tommy on Twitter, TikTok, Twitch, and Instagram. You can also sign up to our Patreon at the link in the episode notes for ad-free episodes, full video interviews, and extra bonus episodes for as little as $5 a month. Finally, make sure you're following us on Spotify. See you soon.
P1 is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.